As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily, the challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning.
All right.
The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves.
You want over there?
This is James T. Deshay.
Yeah, Bronson Hall.
The host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time.
Man.
We have a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. and Deshay, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip-hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1. And it's 24-7, the world's best radio station.
In this day and time, stereotypes are the false descriptions for all of humanity. James T. Deshay is the author of two great poetry books that attempt to describe life from a male perspective. It has been a common belief that men are unable to put into words their deepest feelings and spend most of their time focused on the surface of what life means. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, and Passion, Desire, and Contemplation take you on a journey that has very few travelers, Mr. Deshaies has opened his heart and spirit up in ways that few have ever experienced. The depth of his poetry will have you reading his books and poems over and over again. You will find yourself using his passages to describe your own feelings to your family and friends. It is now time to put aside your thoughts and feelings related to the depth of men's thoughts and delve deeply into the words of James T. Deshaies. Once again, he will put an end to your thoughts that men can't translate their heartfelt spirit into words. Both of these books will allow you to find comfort in the reality of the heart of men. You will spend hours trying to embrace the way men want to love and display their passion to the women they love. Don't be fooled by those books that create love through words of lust, vulgarity, and unhealthy displays of sexual activities. You will discover the types of words that will allow you to rejoice in the future of what love truly means to men. Your book clubs and families will be able to discuss these words without fear. No one will have to leave the room. Both of these books can be purchased at jamestdeshaies2.com and lulu.com. Feel free to reach out to the author at tlreflectionsjtd@gmail.com.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. As always, you know I'm happy and pleased to be here, but today is a special treat because we have with us Mr. Higgins, who gives us the information we need related to our society and the kinds of things that our society are impacting our society, and we should look to try to create or correct as we move forward. How are you doing this evening, Mr. Higgins?
Fine, you, Mr. Deshaies?
I'm doing awesome. Just looking forward to the opportunity to talk to you about what's going on in our nation and across our country.
Yes, sir. Yes, I'm happy to be here this evening and speak with you.
So what is it that you're going to bring to us today that we're going to discuss?
Well, I'm going to discuss this evening something that's prevalent in our community, but we're unaware of. It's like a hidden virus. And there's certain words that we have to use to define this hidden virus. So one of the words is called social engineering, and the other one is called psychological warfare. Now, to understand, to try to have a brief understanding of these words, we have to understand the six main categories of psychology, which happen to be neurobiology, behavior viewed in terms of biological responses, behaviorism, behavior viewed as a product of learned responses, psychoanalysis, behavior viewed as a reflection of unconscious, aggressive, and sexual impulses, humanism, behavior viewed as a reflection of internal growth, cognitive psychology, behavior viewed as a product of various internal sentences or thoughts. And then there's social cultural psychology, behavior viewed as strongly influenced by rules and expectations of specific social groups or cultures.
Now, how are these things used to impact our society?
Well, all of these things are utilized by people who implement social engineering. Now, social engineering is the use of centralized planning in an attempt to manage social change and regulate the future development and behavior of society. So we have to understand that many of the behaviors that we are seeing are the results of things that were into social engineering, things that have been implemented in our community and influenced our society as a whole. So catchphrases, that acronyms that we like LOL, the young people use the word thot, THOT, you know, these acronyms, these are things that are implemented into our society. And if they do it on a large scale or on a small scale, one of the biggest cases of social engineering was the War of the Worlds broadcast with Orson Welles, October 30th, 1938, where he said had a broadcast come out on CBS CBS radio. This one radio. There was no television. It was only radio. And he presented a broadcast. This was a newsreel. And people, and they said it was Martians. And, you know, by the end of the broadcast, an hour later, they told the people, yeah, it was a show. But during the news, real people thought it was actually real. People ran out their homes and were screaming. They thought Martians were coming, and this was something that was done by CBS. And so this is an example of social engineering, an example of social experiment, social experimentation. So we have to understand as people, the population of this country, that oftentimes we are the subject of social experimentation, and we're unaware of it, and we internalize these behaviors without knowing, without truly understanding. Where they come from. You know, oftentimes we'll notice people in the community, you know, they'll say, I colored my hair. And they'll say, I colored my hair blue. I colored my hair purple or this, that. And they'll say, well, I'm just expressing me. I'm just expressing myself. But then you notice that it's thousands of people throughout the country expressing themselves in the same manner. And we also have to see this in terms about when we look at our children. When we look at our children, I stated in previous radio shows, that when we look at our children, they only go in a 5-block radius. They only go so far away from their homes. So how is it that they all have the same habits? They all have the same vices. They all have the same things that they strive for. So there's something going on in our community where our kids, they lust after the Jordans, the phones, and these different things, and these aren't wants, these aren't needs. So we have to start assessing what is driving our children to do this, and we got to understand that social engineering is something that advertisers and marketers use, something that is on a large scale, and we have to understand that, being that we are, as a people, we are insecure about our position in society, we latch on to things that help us feel that help us build our self esteem. And these things are detrimental to our well-being, and they play into psychological warfare. And we deal with psychological warfare. Psychological warfare is defined as actions intended to reduce an opponent's morale. And we hear it on a small scale. So you can have the on a macro scale and a micro scale. Now we hear it on a micro scale. You know. In terms of like sports opponents, you know, psyching each other out on a sports field. But on a larger scale, you know, psychologists use this, you know, to psych a group of people out. And when we understand in this country, you know, that our position in this country was meant for us to be socially engineered at the bottom. So back in 1638 in Maryland, 1638, the Maryland Doctrine of Exclusion, it said neither existing black population, their descendants, nor any other blacks shall be permitted to enjoy the fruits of white society. The doctrine was written to ensure blacks would remain subordinate, non-competitive, and non-compensated workforce. And we're living in the results of that. You know, we might see a handful of, you know, people from our community that actually excel to higher levels, but the mass majority of us lives stifled and stagnant in poverty. So we have to start understanding what's keeping us impoverished. We were never in this country to supposedly thrive. When you hear about immigration brings in low skilled labor. Who is the population here that is the primary laborers of the low skilled labor? African Americans. All right. So anytime you hear about immigration, that stirs unemployment. And to have a balanced economy, you have to have half the population unemployed. So we don't understand these terms. We have balanced economy. Half the population has to be unemployed. So we've been maneuvered into this unemployed position, and now in psychological warfare keeps us there because we don't believe in ourselves. We downplay anything that's our culture. And culture is defined as a set of rules from a group of people. So what happens is we downplay our culture. We downplay anything that is stereotyped as being black. You know what I mean? It's stereotyped as being black. And that's another facet of psychological warfare. The use of propaganda, threats, and other psychological techniques to mislead, intimidate, demoralize, or otherwise influence the thinking or behavior of an opponent. These things can be implemented through mainstream media, stereotype characters, corporate sponsored music, introducing negative ideas, also in religion through faith-based initiative. We don't understand that in the Bush era that our churches were coerced with money from the government. So what happens is that when we see all the morality in our communities fall, is because why? It's because all we've been socially engineered to behave in this manner. We're not aware because we're reactionary people. We're not precautionary people. We're not preemptive. We don't take the initiative to start listening and interact and create things in our community. We fall back and receive things. So we have to start taking the initiative and start questioning what we're receiving, because what we're receiving and it's been detrimental to our community, and we've seen our community slowly on a demise, slowly go down by the behaviors that we see exhibited in our community. And it's on a large scale. Much of what we see, the decadence that we see in our community, comes from individuals not understanding that, you know, what the behaviors that you're being accepted in, that you're participating in, is behaviors that are detrimental, and it actually turns you into it turns you crude. It turns you into someone who doesn't think, who acts off emotion. And we can't have a society where we have a bunch of people acting off emotion. That's why you see so much violence in our community. That's why you see so much breaking up of relationships in our community. That's the basis of a community, a relationship between a man and a woman. And these relationships are damaged. Why? Because of the views that we have about the, it's like a competition. We're in relationships through competition. And we don't understand, and we're internalizing this reality TV, you know, internalizing this music that we're hearing, the chanting of these certain negative vibration that we're saying to ourselves. This is going to prevent us from ever progressing. You know, the habits that we have in terms of about we're 35 years old and 40 years old, and we continue to have entourages. Right now, you should be raising your family. You know what I'm saying? You should be in the end stages of raising your family. So many of these things that we see in our communities, especially with the children, is because of the behaviors that have been implemented to the adults and to the children. And what happens is that we can't ever become a cohesive unit. And we cannot become a cohesive unit because we don't, because what happens is when you deal with social engineering, excuse me, it deals with certain things in terms of our psychology, and it deals with cognitive biases. Cognitive biases are tendencies to think certain ways that can lead to systematic deviations from a standard or rationality or good judgment, and are often studied in psychology. So we have to understand that, and these are modes of operation that economics use. See, the reason why we don't understand many of these terms is because we don't deal with economics. We don't deal with the microeconomics and macroeconomics. We don't understand those terms. We don't understand what's going on with that. So being that we don't understand that we're subject to advertisers and all these things that we come in our community, and we have to understand that the very thing, that one of the most poisonous things in our home is the television. It allows things to come into our home that is not necessarily wholesome. You know, so we have to understand, like I said back before, we have to turn off the television. We have to start understanding the terminologies. We have to start making time in our homes so that we can start having these kind of talks. These kind of talks shouldn't be just on the radio. These kind of talks should be on a regular. This is the subject matter we have to understand. This is the subject matter we have to understand, teach our children. Because our children, unfortunately, they're in a rush to get old. They're rushed to, you know, to explore themselves. But they're out here coming into a world that they're not prepared for. We weren't prepared for. We have to start being prepared. We have to start creating environments in our community that prepare our children, that heal our elders, and they heal the middle-aged population. Because many of us are out here hurt and scarred. Why? Because of what we don't understand. Stevie Wonder said, when you believe in things you don't understand, then you suffer. And a blind man told you this. You know what I mean? So we got to understand that there's some things that are obvious, and we're not taking the time out to deal with these things so that we can ameliorate and edify our communities instead of standing in a stifled position and seeing the decadence that we're seeing, seeing the violence that we're seeing in the homes, seeing the violence that we see in the community, seeing the lack of opportunities for the young men and the women in our communities. These are the root of solutions. We have to start going there. We have to start understanding that, and then we won't get mad at a Trump. We won't get mad at a politician. Why? Because no matter what the politician in office, we'll be in full effect to be able to control what's going on in our communities. Why? Because those local politicians will be in tune with our needs. See, what happens is that local politicians, you know what I'm saying, the only promise they have to give to our community is more police. That's not the solution. You want to bring solutions to our community, you bring industry to our community, because it's been proven that once you bring jobs to the community, every other vice starts diminishing. Domestic violence starts diminishing. Teen dropouts stop diminishing. Alcoholism starts diminishing. Drug use starts diminishing. Why? As soon as people have a reason to live. But what happens is they take the hope out of our community. And once they take our hope out of our community, we start looking for anything that will make us, intoxicate us. Whether it be shopping, whether it be use of illegal drugs, whether it be alcoholism, whether it be going on trips that we can't afford, whether we are making a lifestyle or making this facade that we want to show the world as if we've made it. We haven't made it until we've made it as a people. You know what I mean? And that's what we have to understand. None of us has made it. A Steve Harvey hasn't made it. A Oprah hasn't made it. None of us have made it until we made it as a people. And I'll show you, a few years ago when Oprah went to go buy a bag, some kind of bag in one of those stores, and they didn't know who she was, and they treated her just like what she was, a Negro. So what happens is we got to understand that none of us has made it until we make it as a people, and until we won't make it as a people, until we start seeing the devices stagnate us, you know, until we start understanding why do we downplay the fact that we like watermelon? I love watermelon. I got a master's degree. I love watermelon. I love fried chicken. Why do I have to say, oh, I don't like that anymore, if I want to act like if I've evolved, if I've reached a higher plateau? Why do I have to say, I eat filet mignon and I don't eat spare ribs, or I don't eat chitlins, or I don't eat collard greens? Why are these things that downplayed as being negative, or as not being high class, or as not having its proper place? And that's a condition of psychological warfare. When we look at the things that we like to do as if they're not good enough, and we have to understand that, you know, we are as good as any other people. We are, you know, we are as good as any other race out here. And the thing about it is that we have to love ourselves and internalize that love and really do it, so that we'll be able to break these bonds and these barriers and create employment opportunities in our community. We have to create employment opportunities in our community. Our brother from Philadelphia, he's creating employment opportunities through recycling. He's recycling. He's making hundreds of dollars a day recycling. Why? This is an employment opportunity. We could create our own jobs in our community. But we cannot do this if we just look at everything that we do as if it's not sufficient, if it's not good enough. We have to support our black businesses. We have to support our black artists, our black our little young rappers, that hip hop and rappers and stuff like that. We have to support them. We have to let them know that, hey brother, we'll support you. You don't have to imitate this guy from television. You don't have to be like this guy. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to do that. We'll support you. Be yourself. Put out the music that you want to put out, so that we can start hearing the music that we want to hear. There's so much that we have to do in our community, and stop lollygagging and playing around and this, that, and the other, because our kids are crying out. Our kids are crying out, and they're crying out for help, and they're going to other places. They're going to psychiatrists. They're going to places that have no investment. They have no stock in our children. Our children are an experiment to us. Our children need to come to us. We have to start more educating ourselves, so that when our children have these problems, these issues, and these things, that they can come inside the community and it's solved there. You know, Malcolm X said one time, he said that if you have a problem with your family, you don't go out into the street and argue with everyone. You argue inside the home. You argue inside that home. You keep that argument inside that home. It doesn't even matter if everybody in our building can hear it. But when you walk out that door, y'all walk out that door as a cohesive unit. And that's what we have to start getting back to. We got to stop airing out our differences. We got to take back control of our image. Because that's one of the most detrimental things. That's what's one of the most biggest things that prevents us from getting employment. The loose uses of our image. Because when our young men go into the regular world and they try to take off the do-rag, comb their hair and this, that, and the other, now it's not only the tattoos and this, that, and the other, it's the image of being black that's negative in itself. So we got to understand, that we got to take back our image. We can't allow these entertainers to allow to just for the sake of money to star in pictures that make us look bad. We can't allow these entertainers to continue to make music that's going, you know, that's going to push negative lifestyles on our children. And we have to take this back. You know, just like this guy Colin Kaepernick. I'm not a sports fan. I don't watch anything. But it's the people are right. If the brother took a stand for the football thing or whatever, we shouldn't watch it. They're going to ostracize them. Why should we patronize? Why are we going to continue to patronize people who don't respect us? And then we wonder why our kids don't have this, our kids don't have that. And you know what I'm saying? And we sit there and complain. No, it's action. We can take action. And once we start understanding what is going on in our community, how we're being manipulated so that we reduces our self-esteem, then we'll be able to take action. But as long as we continue to lie to ourselves and act like everything's all right and cheer for the 2-3 people that appear to have made it, but we don't even know really if they've made it or not, then you know what I'm saying? We're going to continue to languish in the menagerie that we're in. So we got to understand this, that we are our own worst enemy, and until we start educating ourselves, you know what I'm saying? So in the Bible it says, my people suffer from lack of knowledge. You know what I mean? And we are the people who, you know, Dick Gregory said, he said, God bless the dead, because he just passed. He said, we the only person that trade, that fight for education and not liberation. You know what I mean? You know, and then we don't even fight to educate ourselves. You know what I mean? So we need to start getting in tune with that and start learning how to educate ourselves and start creating our own schools. Every culture has a school but us. Every coach has
okay,
his own
let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
You, in terms of policies,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that policies were made in order to break up our families? You know, there was a time during public housing where a woman could not get public housing if there was a man in her home. So I'm asking you. Do you think there was an attempt by by organizations that were supposed to be supporting the poor to break up families and create a situation where men were thrown out of the homes and weren't allowed to support their families?
Well, Mr. Deshay, I'm so glad you asked that question. Because we can it's not a thought. We can actually pull a fact out. So when we pull out this fact, one fact is called the Cloward and Pivin strategy. CLOWARD, Pivin, PIVEN strategy. And this strategy was implemented after the 1965 Watts riots when they realized that blacks were waiting for reparations or whatever civil rights were supposed to give them. So what happens is that, you know what, and when they implemented this, they said they was going to use welfare to weaken the poor. And when they implemented welfare to weaken the poor, they did this, implemented it nationwide. Now, these were two sociologists from Columbia University. And what they did was they were able to galvanize the, you know, policy to allow them to implement this around the country. And they used an organization called the NWRO, the National Welfare Rights Organization. And guess what they did? They got a Negro to be the face. And so they got this black man. Oh, I forgot his name right at the tip of my tongue right now. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But they got this black man to come in and head this organization. And then how did they sell it? They sold it as reparations. Now, this is the 1970s. They sold it as reparations. So when... Well, they sold it as reparations. So when they sold it as reparations, right? When they sold it as reparations, the people went down to the welfare office fighting, screaming, saying, give me my welfare, give me my welfare, da 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 da, as if they were owed to, if it was owed to them. And this was also a test on the strength of the economy. So it had a two-pronged effect. It put welfare, it got the liberal effect of wealth, for black people who went to welfare with their hands out, and it separated the family, just like you said, because when they implemented the welfare, the father had to come out the home. Now, they got in the movie about this, is one of my favorite movies, called Claudine. You know what I'm saying? With James Earl Jones and Diane Carroll. And that's an example of it. What happens is at that time, yes, they kept one of the men out the home. And this is what I'm talking about, social engineering. So they went from, at that time, having to force the men out the home, and we've been socially engineered to not even want the men in the home at all now. Now I just have the baby, and I don't need a husband. And at the same exact time, they relaxed the, you know what I'm saying, they relaxed that moral conscience on marriage. So at one time, if you notice, everybody from the 70s, if you're from the 70s and prior to, most people's parents were married. It's like after the 1970-something, 75, 76, they were going to the 80s, you know, the marriage just dissipated. You know what I mean? And we started having all these out-of-wedlock births. So, yes, they definitely use welfare as a systematic tool through policy. Because anything is created through law, through executive, through legislation. You know what I'm saying? Through the legislative branch of the government. And it's executed through the executive branch of government. And it's thought over by the judicial branch of the government. So we got to understand that, yes, they definitely implemented policy to break up the black family. You know what I'm saying? Through the use of welfare. You know what I'm saying? Through the use of, and what happened was that what the welfare did, it matched the earning power of the father. It matched the earning. So they gave the woman enough income so it matched the earning power of the father, so it made him obsolete. It made him no longer need it. Because remember, black men can only get a low-paid paying job anyway. So being that it matched the funds that he could bring home, all it made him it rendered him obsolete. And they didn't need anything, need him from. And I've done my own inquiries on this. And I've asked older brothers that's probably in their 70s and their late 70s now, mid to late 70s, and you ask them about welfare, they said that's the thing that broke up the family. So what happens is we got, like I said, when it's called social engineering, we got to understand these tools that have been used to manipulate us to not like each other and not to love each other. And you know what I'm saying? And they sitting over watching us like insects, like an ant farm, seeing how we're going to react next. And this is what we got to understand. And until we start understanding that, you know, we're going to continue to suffer. We're going to continue to stifle. We're going to continue to see the nonsense and the violence and the lack of morality that we see in our communities as long as we don't understand how we've been maneuvered into this position. You know what I mean? And that's a prime example right there. That in itself right there, the welfare in itself, you know what I mean, in terms about the NWRR, the Clover to Purpose strategy, and how to use and in New York City, it almost broke New York City in the 70s. It almost broke New York City because you had so many people in the welfare rolls, it almost broke the city budget. So we got to understand it's historical. It has historical. And then when it comes to welfare, FDR, the Roosevelt, because when welfare was first created, it wasn't even created for us. He said it had the effect of being a narcotic on his State of the Union speech. You know what I'm saying? So we got to understand the things that we digesting and taking in and all of these different things. You know, we got to understand it, and we don't. And that's why we're losing. That's why we're losing as a group of people. And that's why, you know, and that's why it's going to take us taking control of ourselves and disciplining ourselves and being examples in our community. It's going to take us waking up and, you know what I'm saying, start being effective in the schools in our community. It's going to take us, you know what I'm saying, you know, taking a hold of the bad children in our community. It's going to take us reaching out to those brothers that just came home from prison. It's going to take us reaching out to those kids. You got to be afraid of them kids. How are you going to be afraid of them just because they're overgrown with hair on their face?
Let's take our first break and we'll come back.
All righty.
Every time we hear the music and feel this love together, we got the time that lasts forever. Thank you.
We got the whole thing working out so right. And it's just the way we planned it. We got the kind that lasts forever. Don't you know that we're in this love together? And like berries on the vine, get sweeter all the
significance of our lives is found in the level of commitment we have to greatness. Our Creator has planted the only seeds we need to rise above the level of mediocrity. The world needs all of us to rise above the norm. The enemy of humanity is in the wasted greatness that resides in those that refuse to care and fertilize their personal seeds of greatness. No solutions in life's problems can be obtained without individuals being willing to bring their seeds of greatness to reality. There are too many dreams being left in the graves of the disenchanted. The joy and peace of the world should not be put at risk by our reluctance to work toward our legacies. Our families and communities need the value of all the treasures that exist within us. No blessing should remain unnurtured. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday and Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. This show is here for your voice to be heard loud and clear. It is important that we do what is needed to make sure that people know what our opinions are, and this is the platform to make that possible. Please call in at 657-383-0309. Also, please visit my website at jamestdeshay2.com. That's jamesddeshay, the number 2.com. Just a Thought by James T. Deshay. There is never a perfect time to step out on faith. It would always require risking the safety of where you are at that very moment. But one will never be completely happy when their dreams are not being reached. The higher the dreams, the greater the risk. When the right opportunity makes itself available, you have to close your ears to the naysayers and move forward beyond your dreams. Visit WealthDaddySystem.com. That's www.WealthDaddySystem.com. WealthDaddySystem.com. push yourself beyond your fears, and you'll reach your dreams.
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, we have to make sure we understand what is happening to us as a community and across the country to determine if people are implementing procedures and procedures that are going to negatively impact us as a society. We have to watch how people try to emulate us and fight against the stereotypes that are created by people who don't want what's best. So we're going to go to our lines and talk to our guests and see what statements or questions they'd like to ask. And we want to get a meaningful conversation going with everyone so that we can find solutions to the issues that are impacting our lives. Audrey, how are you doing this evening?
Superior Thunder to everyone. And let me just say to the brother, I am so proud of you, and I'm thankful to you for the key messages that you're delivering and the direction in which, again, you think that we should go, and how you've outlined the importance of us being authentic. And you're exactly right. In so many circles and things, and we always try to make sure that, you know, we downplay our roots, and we should never do that. If people cannot accept you who you are, then that's not where you need to be, because, you know, the Lord created us all special, and we are to be proud of our legacy. And I really like the fact that you're saying be proud of who you are. I also like the fact that the importance of us coming together and taking action and being of unity. And, you know, sometimes we can get distracted because you say, well, what difference does that make? I like you. I watch football, and I enjoy it. Not that I have a special team, but to know that a brother of mine have been just mistreated. In reality, a person that is talented, a person that is skilled and had the right, it wasn't even against his contract, because sometimes, you know, people say, well, you know, when you agree to work for a company, you adhere for the rules and regulations. Well, the contract didn't state that he could not express himself. But yet when people can come out, the KKK and the Nazis and all, and they are expressing what they feel, if you want to put it that way, and nothing is done about it. I have a problem with that. I'm be just one person, but this football season, unless something changed, I'm sending this one out. That's just the one thing that I think we can, again, it's so important for us to be involved in our communities, take action, be involved in what's going on in our communities. Make the time to care for our young people. I'm always talking about how important it is for our next generation to understand from where they have come, how great they are, and where we expect for them to go. And I could just go on and on, but you fired me up and just made the Lord continue to bless you. But more importantly, let us all take some action and unify and work together. And don't be fooled by, well, this just one person or this just a few people making a difference. Well, that's how you add. One plus one is two, and then two plus one adds on. Amen.
Well, two or more gathered, let the Lord's name be praised.
Amen. Glory. Glory to God.
Amen.
Thank you, James. Okay, bye.
All right. Regina, what are your thoughts about what we need, you know, these policies that are being implemented that are destroying the fabric of our families and trying to use stereotypes to make us, as Mr. Higgins say, feel badly about the things that we like and enjoy, no matter what they might be in our lives and in our history?
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
I'm not sure if I'm understanding a question. And I've been listening, I just don't understand.
Well, what I was asking is, how do we need to truly evaluate the policies that our government tried to implement? And in some instances, these policies were used to destroy the fabric of the African American family. And some of the people use stereotypes to try to make us feel bad about the things that we wear and the things that we eat.
And you're saying that the government is applying policies that would
we were talking about how at one time if you were in public housing, you could not have a man living with you in public housing. That somehow or another they were only giving women who were separated from their men the right to live in public housing and so that they could receive welfare. So that was a policy that sought to break up the family.
Well, you know, and I guess I'm going to go out on the limb on this thing that I don't know what anybody else is saying, so you'll understand that what I'm saying is honestly my opinion of that. So, therefore, with that being an example, if indeed a man and a woman are together, then I believe that with their salaries together, then they would be able to afford to stay somewhere. One reason for this policy was that so many men were taking advantage of women who had a place to stay. And so that was a way of protecting the woman. I guess I don't want it to be believed that the man, quote unquote, the man was out to get us because a man could not live in the apartment with a woman. So I can't see that was a negative thing. I understand what both are saying is that was just
Regina. I'm not aware of any other program that's in existence that's out there to protect a female from making a decision of who will. I do believe that it was part of a strategy to divide the family. It's so many things that happen to women. Now, don't get me wrong. I know there are men that take advantage of women, and that's been going on, and it continues to go on, and it's not right. And what the brother is saying is that's why we come together as a unity and teach all young people how to treat females and males how to be treated as well. We have to teach that. But I'm not aware of the government stepping in to try to protect a woman with a decision of who's going to take advantage of her or not.
Go ahead.
Ms. Higgins?
Oh.
Yeah,
oh, me?
I mean, I agree with what you all were. I agree with that, with whoever was speaking, the lady who was speaking. I'm not aware of any other program, but then, too, I'm not aware of everything that's going on out there. But I will say that I personally do not like paying taxes or you know, monies going towards. Here in Columbia, if you are a married couple and you do not meet the median or you meet the income guidelines that would allow the family to live in the public housing, you're able to live there. Now, I've worked with families, husbands, wife and children who were able to live in that home together. But shacking up on government funds, I'm sorry, I just cannot agree with that. But they're not tearing apart families if the families do not meet the guidelines.
Virginia, that has been a recent change. In the 70s and 80s, whether you were married or not, a man couldn't be in the live there and the woman get public housing, because if she had a husband, then they would not be able to apply for it. Mr. Higgins, I'm going to ask you to give your knowledge related to that.
Oh, well, like I said prior to, I said
if we do any research, you know, like I said, the Cloven and Priven strategy that was implemented by two Columbia sociologists. They were actually married, Richard Cloven and Francis Fox Piven. So these Columbia sociologists concocted a plan to diminish the anger and the riots, because we have comes out of Johnson's Great Society, the Kerner Commission. You know, in the late 60s and early 70s, they're about to have a movie about Detroit, about, you know, about the riots that were going on in the North that weren't going on in the South. And they were confused. I said, why is this going on in the North and all the intense racism is going on in the South? So what happened was when they implemented they started devising ways to socially engineer the population. So one of the ways they implemented was creating a welfare system. Well, implementing a welfare system in the black community. They started creating all these housing programs. Housing came from in the first place. It's because the people were living in the ghettos. This was Martin Luther King's Poor People's Movement. Right before he died, that was his last movement. His Poor People Movement was about addressing the poverty, the lack of medical, all the disease that was going on in the black community. This is what the Black Panthers also implemented with their breakfast programs and their medical programs and this, that, and the other. So what happened was the government eventually stepped in. And when the government steps in, it implements decisions, it implements policy. Once these policies are implemented, we are unaware of the long-term effects of these policies. We are unaware of the intricate details of these policies. So we are unaware of this. And like I said prior to, we have the movie Claudine as an example of the welfare policies removing the man out the home. Patrick Moynihan was another one who spoke about removing the man out the home, about the welfare, how this would be detrimental to the children. And so what happens is that we've had 40 years of this. In 40 years of removing the man out the home, you see the children run amok as they are. And then what we have this shiftiness, you know what I'm saying, at the same exact time, another policy came in, feminism. Feminism came in again in the 70s. See, what happens is a society, they like to push history all together. But feminism fell asleep in 1918, the suffrage movement. After that got quiet, and it popped back up to the 70s. Why? Because they realized it was the women who were galvanizing the men to step up and do what they had to do. It was the women. We have to understand that the civil rights movement in itself was started from a woman named Recy Taylor, who was raped by six white men from Alabama and who never were charged. And it was Rosa Parks who went to those trials to get those men charged. And that's why when she sat on the bus, she spearheaded the civil rights movement. So we have to understand that it was decades of black women who were house workers and black women who were being raped and molested by white men. And this is what spearheaded the civil rights movement. And a woman named Danielle L. McGuire, who wrote a book at the dark end of the street, Danielle L. McGuire, who happens to be a Caucasian woman, wrote a book, and she expressed about all this information that I'm saying. See, this information is researchable, and this is the criminality of it. Why isn't Oprah talking about it? Why isn't my man, when everybody loved Bill Cosby, why wasn't he speaking about these things? See, we got to understand something, you know, that in our community, we got to understand the positions, you know, everybody's position in our community, and we don't understand that, and that's why we can be socially engineered. We can be subject to psychological warfare. Why? Because we don't even understand what's going on in our community. None of us are sitting around those round tables when they implement policies. None of us are sitting around those round tables when they're saying this is bipolar or this is ADHD and these are schizophrenia. Schizophrenia at one time was labeled a white disease. It wasn't until the protests of the 60s and 70s that they labeled it a black disease. And that's when it came. Protests, a Caucasian brother named Jonathan Metzl wrote a book called Protest Psychosis, explaining how they shifted. They had to find a reason how to demonize us. We have to understand that when Johnson put those policies in, when he said, all right, the civil rights movement, when he signed that civil rights bill, we almost like sold our soul away. Because look what's happened to us since then. Look what's happened to us since then. Kane got killed, everybody got killed, and the next thing you know, our neighborhood is going down the drain. We got to realize the role that black exploitation movies played in all of these things. You know what I'm saying? What happened was social engineer. You take people from a proud people to being a people who think they're too good. I remember a soup in Harlem one time told me Jamaican soup. He said, yo, the black made them become supers in the buildings because they wanted to be super fly. So super fly came from the movie. They wanted to be something that they weren't. And then what happened was all these other people moved their people in the buildings, and when the black people living in the community had no power because they didn't respect the super job. You know what I mean? And that was the core of the community. So we got to understand what's been happening to us. And a lot of times we stand on platforms and we regurgitate propaganda. We don't really know what happened to us. It's time for us to start researching. It's time for us, because there's a lot of things that have been implemented us since slavery, since the Civil Rights Movement, and to get us to where we at to today. Right now we are a people that the whole world is laughing at. No one respects us. I don't care if it's a Oprah. I don't care if it's a Barack Obama. I don't care who you're talking about. No one respects us. And if you don't believe me, it's not my opinion. Just see how they treat us. Just see how they interact with you when you spend your money with them.
Let me get some more of your people. Let me get some more of your people in. I'm gonna call the last four digits of your number 8593. Give me your name and where you're calling from.
On Tavon Williams. I'm calling from Harlem, New York.
All right.
Would you like to make a statement or ask a question?
Yes, definitely. You know, what Mr. Higgins was saying is so accurate. Like, in the community, it's so versatile. As far as definitely when you're dealing with education and the black kids with the black parents. Like,
mm-hmm.
back in the 90s, In the early 90s, you know, when all these programs were implemented to what it is now, you know, you had parents
mm-hmm.
actually, you know, assisting their kids with homework, you know, questioning their kids, you know, how was your school day? You know,
mm-hmm.
now we have
mm-hmm.
all these different programs, you know, that, in my opinion, a lot of them has actually brainwashed kids. You know, you get paid, you go to school, you know, parents now are feeling, okay, well, my kids at these programs, they doing their homework. I ain't got to ask them about their homework, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. But at the end of the day, that's not what these kids need. You know, the structure of a family starts at home. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
start with the school system. It doesn't start, you know, outside of the home. And I really blame a lot with social media. You know, because a lot of information is being given to these kids too fast. You know, right now, you know, these kids is dealing with issues. This is their top issues. Sex, drugs, scamming. This is their issues in today's time. You know, versus back in the 90s and the 80s, you know, where it was more structured. You know, it was definitely much more harder back then. But it was still a family structure back then, because we knew what it was back then to what it is now, you know. So what Mr. Higgins is saying is so on point. Like, it touches on, you know, the family structure now, the black family structures right now, you know. And I have a book coming out.
Speak on it.
First, you know, Oath to Honor, you know, and this book actually touches on, you know, what it was in Harlem, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, before all this recidivism came about, before all this, you know, these changes in Harlem happening now, you know, because right now we're dealing with a Harlem that's watered down. Pretty much we're dealing
mm-hmm.
with a borough that's watered down.
Mm-hmm.
What it was. You know, we had, back then, we had, block communities to where we had you know, structure within our own communities, block organizations,
mm-hmm.
people stepping up, dealing with their own communities. We didn't really need police service, because at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
we knew what was going on in our community.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what was going on in our community. You know,
mm-hmm.
we had block parties in the summertime. I'm talking on every other block, there was a block party.
Mm-hmm.
There was something for the kids to do. You know, right now, this is ridiculous, you know, to what's going on right now with these kids. You know, and it's so sad, you know. I'm trying to talk to the kids in our neighborhoods right now, you know, and just get an idea of some of the things that you know, they up in, and a lot of their issues, believe it or not, it's not even on the street. But they bring it on the street because they don't want to bring it home. You know, right now, every time I look at the internet, if it's Facebook, if it's what's that, Instagram, I'm so tired of seeing 18-year-olds, rest in peace, sleep in peace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of that. Rest in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on? We didn't have
mm-hmm.
we didn't have that coming up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so sad to what we're dealing with right now. But like I said, you know, what Mr. Higgins has touched on, you know, it's touching me. I got my whole family right now listening to this station right now. And everybody's
mm-hmm.
like at the call because everything is, what he's saying is affecting us in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to another caller, 3550-3550. Give me your name and where you're calling from. Give me your name and where you're calling from. All right. Let's go to 3095. 3095, give me your name and where you're calling from. You want to talk to us today? All right, everybody just listening. Okay. 1120, give us your name and where you're calling from.
I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina, and my name is Cherry.
Cherry, what are your thoughts related to the issues that are in the black community, and how do we need to address them?
I think that it should be addressed very much more appropriately, because I've seen up on Facebook to where this woman, she got arrested for a ticket, but the officer had slammed her down upon the ground for no apparent reason and arrested her for no reason. And he couldn't explain why, you know, he did it, just like the two other black folks that got killed. The man, the woman that was in the car, she had got killed, and, well, not her, but the boyfriend, because the officer had shot him because he was reaching for his phone, and he thought that he was reaching for something else, but which I don't think that's right, because I feel like that if it was someone that was a different color, then it wouldn't have happened. But it's just racial. It's too much racial, and it's too much, you know, too much of just black community going through a lot right now, and I don't think that is right. And also, my sister, she has got pulled over because for some fact that I think that she was black. He couldn't explain why he had pulled her over. He was touching and feeling all upon her, which I absolutely, positively think that it's not right. It's just dirty.
Mr. Higgins, what do you think
yes.
is the stereotypes that are being used against minorities? It isn't lending itself to the rough treatment that is being perpetrated on people of color?
As a direct effect. As a direct effect. We have to understand, you know, that's why in our community we have to understand psychology. We have to understand modes of behavior. We have to understand that our image is the most valuable thing in this world. And the fact that our image has been lended to things that have the most wickedest, nefarious connotations to them is the reason why every time we're stopped by the police, they treat us in a manner, such and such manner. We have to understand psychologically, they've been programmed to look at us in a certain manner. So what happens is that you know, when, you know, when even like when children turn off the lights in the dark, what are they scared of the dark? You know what I mean? So we got to understand how the, how that's different for us, but it has a strong effect on them when it comes to dark, and they can, and it's been said that mothers use white mothers use the big black man as a way to scare their children when they're small. So, and you know, and so when we see things like, you know, people getting shot and this, that, and the other, these are the direct connections to the image that we have, that we see. We see ourselves acting in this behavior. So how do you think other people's cultures are internalizing us? You know, and then we applaud this one because he made $1 million. We applaud this one because they got a Grammy or an Oscar. But, yeah, you just violated the image for all of us. We applaud Halle Berry. We applaud Puffy. We applaud Jay-Z. We applaud all these characters. You know what I mean? And then people get offended if you say anything about them. Oh, why did you say anything? How could you have more affection and endearment towards Jay-Z or one of these other these characters, these other host of characters, than you have for your own mother, your grandmother, your family members, the people in your community? How can you have more endearment to that? That in itself is something wrong with it. And the thing about it is that, we've been so conditioned to thinking that the black man is a demon, that the black family is not worthy, that the black woman has this struggle by herself and this, that, and the other. But we got to understand that, you know, we are mimicking, what I said it just precisely, mimicking the behavior of the Jewish community in this country at the turn of the century. So understand that. Do your research. You know what I mean? We so much in the cause and effect of now, but do your research. We are mimicking the exact patterns. In the Jewish community at the turn of the century, the fathers were walking out on their families. They had this thing called the National Desertion Board. The National Desertion Board was right here in New York City, and they had listed 100,000 Jewish women who couldn't find their husbands. So, you know, walking out on, and this is something that we can't even fathom now. We can't even see that. So this is something, we can fix this problem that we've been sucked into. You know what I mean? Because at that time, they weren't talking about black men walking out of their families. They were talking about Jewish men walking out of their families. So we got to understand that, how we've been socially engineered into a position and to the bottom rung, how economically and morally. And we got to understand that there's a way out as long as we hold on to our morals and our values. We have to understand that we have to stop applauding mediocrity. We have to stop applauding. We applaud now. We don't even know anything about Hollywood because we see some of our greatest actors, people who have starring roles, and later on in their career, they play co-starring roles. That means you fell back. You didn't even acquiesce. You didn't even go higher. So, you know, we applaud the mediocrity. We don't even understand mediocrity. How does Angela Bassett go from being a star to a co-star? You know what I mean? Movie headliner to a co-star, to a backup. That's like Jordan going to play in the bench. You know what I mean? So we don't understand that. Why? Because we don't understand that. All we you know, we're so impoverished. We're impoverished in spirit and mind and in attitude. So that's what we got to understand. We got to remove that impoverished spirit. We got to be – I remember my daughter. My daughter was worked in a law firm. And the law firm, she had to keep her hair perm. She couldn't wear braids. They was like, oh no, we don't do that here. So we gotta understand our culture is pushed down. You know what I mean? Our culture's been pushed down in so many different ways. And it's up to us, man, to be proud of who we are. You know, I'm proud of who I am. You know, the thing about it is, and it's us to up is, you know, it's funny that it's up to somebody like myself, someone who's in the streets, someone who's part of that era, part of that environment. And I'm not ashamed of it, because academically I could, you know, that there's not many that could sit next to me. So what happens is that why are we pushing off our stars are in our community, but no, we're applauding people who have no connection to us. We got to understand about the talented 10th. The talented 10th was a segment of black people who were suggested to be the smartest and the greatest, and they were going to get all the fruits that America had to offer, while the masses of us starved, the 90% of us starved. So we got to understand that. You know what? And if you know someone's trying to starve you out, why would go along with it? You know, and it's our fault.
All right,
let's go to
another break,
accepting this.
And we'll come back and continue our conversation.
Get up. Wake up.
Just a Thought by James T. Deshaies. The destination of one's life is not determined by where they are, but by where their heart is determined to go. It is important to look past the present and dream about your future. The value of your internal spirit remains the same throughout your life. Once you take your first breath, the measure of your future is unlimited. You only need to take one positive step after the other to get out of your present situation. Always know that there is a helping hand prepared to assist you along the way. Keep your head and your eyes facing forward to see the hearts of those ahead of you. The path they suggest will always be better than the issues that are behind you. The Creator that protects us all will never move from where you last left Him. He is patiently waiting for your return. God invested in you from the outset, and now it is time for your value to rise. Don't doubt that which has been there from the beginning, your ability to turn your dreams into reality. This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, the radio show where your voice needs to be heard. The show is on 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday and Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Call in at 657-383-0309. Please visit my website, JamesTDeshaies2.com. That's JamesTDeshaies2.com. Also consider purchasing both my books, Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, Passion, Desire, and Contemplation. They can be purchased at my website or at lulu.com. That's lulu.com. I look forward to you being a part of my audience. Call in every day at 657-383-0309.
Audrey, has the middle class lost sight of the battle that is being fought by the poor? And somehow we're not willing to raise our voices when we see the attack and the obstacles that are put before them?
Well, I think it goes back to what the conversation was about earlier, the importance of us being involved and realizing that we haven't arrived until all of us have arrived. We still have a struggle and a journey to go. Being in the middle class, I think we are so busy sometimes just still trying to make it, trying to succeed, just trying to do. We're spinning our wheels so much, and we're not necessarily investing as well as we could into our own culture and into our legacy and into our community and into our people. So like I said earlier, and I jumped on just a little late, but at the time I jumped on, it was, I believe the conversation was about the importance of, you know, educating ourselves. Don't let the television be the mode of educating us and informing us. It's important that we do the research. It's important that we take time to, you know, listen to and utilize technology that will enhance and advance us. So I can't say for the whole middle class, speaking as a whole, but I could say if we just kind of look at it a little bit from my perspective, I think we're just so busy trying to achieve. We have not necessarily taken the time to recognize what's truly important to us, and that's the family and making sure that we're investing in that.
Joyce, I know you arrived late, but I wanted to make sure I came to you. You know, we're talking about what people of color need to do to fight back the organizations and the types of procedures that are put forth that limit the ability for people of color to move up and that keep us down. What is the obligation of people who have gotten, have made some headways to reaching back and providing a lifeline to those who may not be as well off?
Well, you just said it to me. That should be the obligation to do that, to bring someone up. Once you get to the plateau, you need to look back and give that person a lift. You know what the struggle is all about. You can tell them how to get there, some of the obstacles to make their transition that much easier. That's the purpose of it. When you go through all the hardship, more or less, then it's our job is to try to ease and show the people coming behind us what they call the ropes. You know, don't be afraid to teach the ropes to your parents. That's key right there. You got to show them the ropes so you can make their transition easier so they can help their fellow man do it. That's what we need to do.
All right. 8593, give us your name again and where you're calling from. And what are your thoughts about the middle class having an obligation to spend more effort in getting everybody to a certain level?
Well, definitely. In my opinion, the middle class definitely has an obligation to fulfill their duty within the community. And I think that's for everybody. It's not just one social or one economic deity. It's for all. You know, if you live in a community, you should definitely contribute to that community, wherever it may be, health, education. You know, this is where you live. You know, we always sit there and we try to, you know, formalize or point out certain people that's probably making more money, you know, or even more money, you know, to contribute more. But it's up to the community to actually, you know, support the community in which they live. In my understanding, you know, growing up in Harlem, you know, I've been here, you know, over 30 years. And it was always community that supported the community. You know, we didn't put faces, we didn't put monetary value, you know, on what you could do or what you can't do. You know, it was who needed, who was there to actually contribute to those that actually needed. You know, and back then, you know, everybody needed. It wasn't just, you know, I remember throwing, you know, rent parties, stuff like that. You know, everybody helped out. You know, it was a different, you know, this is what we missing. We missing this as a community. You know, everybody wanted to sit there and point fingers, which is not good, because at the end of the day, nobody is actually, you don't have to. You know what I'm saying? It's like you don't have to do what you don't want to do. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, coming together, those that do, because even when they don't have, is the ones that count, because they're not looking for nothing in return. This is the community I grew up in. You know, this is the love we had. You know, and a lot of these communities, this is what they're missing right now. This is what they're missing. And it's so sad, because at the end of the day, you know, when we sit here and we try to sit there and bring focus back to our communities and try to, you know, bring that positive, you know, focus back, we misrepresent ourselves, because we always we don't need a handout. If we have each other, we need that. We don't need that. This is the base of Black Wall Street was based on. Take care of ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Do for each other. Keep the money in our communities. You know, we have Black businesses in our communities, especially in Harlem. You know, it's bad. A lot of shops open up in our communities to where, you know, we could lean on each other for that support. We keep the money in our communities, then what happens is we provide jobs in our communities. We provide education on our terms in our community. You know, when we start reaching out for others, then they have a control. They have a more say so on what's going on in our communities. Let's stop that. Let's get back to the basics. That's where I go to the basics, to the home, to the community. Let's get back to that. And that's just my, you know, thoughts on that situation.
All right, let's go to our final break, and then we'll come back and try to give everybody opportunity to have their last word.
The host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We're going to go back and try to give everybody an opportunity to say their final thought for this evening. 3095, what is your final thought for this evening? Do you have a final thought for this evening?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. What's your final thought for this evening?
Well, my final thoughts is I'm just inspired, and like he said, man, we just all got to come together and, you know, pick up and put it together like how we supposed to put it together, how we've been putting it together. You know, we strong together than we is apart. So I'm just saying, like he said, everybody just got to pick ourselves up and do it and just stand on our own tenet and just keep it moving. You know, we just got to be strong for one another.
All right, I appreciate you calling, and make sure you call back again.
Okay.
All right, Joyce, what is your final thought for this evening?
Well, my final thought is that we haven't really made it until we all make it as a whole. It is our obligation is that once we get there and once we feel as though that, you know, that we have achieved, we need to look back, reach back, and pull back and bring our brothers and sisters up to par and teach them the ropes. Thank you.
Amen. 3550, what is your final thought for this evening? 3550. All right, Audrey, what is your final thought for this evening?
It's important for us to be our authentic self, be proud of who we are, what we eat, what we wear, how we dress, and love each other, making sure that we understand the importance of treating each other with love, and that means speaking positive into the life of others. And let's make sure that we are involved in our communities as it relates to our political leaders and the actions that we're taking to create a legacy for our young people.
Amen.
All right. 8593, what is your final thought for this evening?
Words is political. Actions is a movement.
All right. Amen.
All right. Mr. Higgins, what's your final thought for this evening as we close out? And we want everybody to know we'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time at 657-383-0309. But, Mr. Higgins, what's your final thought as we close out this evening?
Well, I have to plug my pastor in the Bronx National Church of God, Pastor Philip. If you want your soul saved, 1294 Interville Avenue. And I want to plug in my brother, Trayvon Williams, his book, Oath to Honor. And, you know, y'all go out there and get that. I just want everybody in our community to start doing some research, to start spending time in your home and spend time to have communication between each other and start making reading a priority in your home, because all of this came from, well, all the knowledge I know, everybody else can have it too. If only you just apply yourself, and that's what we have to do, start applying ourselves and start loving who we see in the mirror, and, you know, and telling ourselves that we love what we see in the mirror. You know, without all the makeup, without all the other stuff, love who we see in the mirror, and then we'll be able to love who we see in our community.
All right. Well, I want to again just let everybody know we'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time at 657-383-0309. And I have to let you know that Audrey let me know I was doing had forgotten that the day was Sunday, and I needed to play a little bit more spiritual music today. So forgive me for forgetting the day we were on, and I'll try to remember that the next time, Miss Audrey.
On Rest in Peace, Dick Gregory.
Oh, yeah, golly.
Rest in peace, Dick Gregory. And that's who we have to recognize our martyrs, you know, our leaders, the people who put, and whether we agree with everything they did or not, but as long, you know, they stood up for, you know, they left back something for us to hold on to. And that's important. You know, we have to start applauding our people and start applauding everyone else, you know.
Yeah, rest in peace, Dick Gregory. Strong voice has been quieted, and we're going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him when I was in college, and he was just a voice in the wilderness, and we're going to miss having
Amen.
His voice.
Amen. Amen.
All right.
But his truth still here.
On Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Take care, everybody.
Amen.
Hello. I'm the music major. This is my man, Jay Andre. He got a question to ask. Talk to him, Jay.
Is there anybody in love?
Mm-hmm.